Now I'm going to speak about demigods. We're supposed to speak about Krishna. So I'll speak about the demigods in relation to Krishna. Who are the demigods? Well, apart from their position, it can be said they are Brahma, Shiva, Ganesh, Vishvakarma this morning. We're speaking about Vishvakarma. Chandra, Vayu, Indra, Surya, then Saraswati, Ganga is sometimes considered demigods. Ganga Devi, she's a Devi. So these are the demigods. And Hinduism is generally considered to be the worship of many demigods. It's considered to be a major part of Hinduism. And in our Krishna conscious movement, we're not supposed to worship the demigods. Worship of demigods is spreading in the West also. So let us examine this topic, especially those of you who are from Tamil, Hindu backgrounds. You know very well about worship of demigods. In among the Tamil people, the worship, well, there are different divisions, but I guess most popular is Murugan, the worship of Murugan, which is a more or less a Tamil name. I know that name is not used outside. For Skanda, Kartikeya, known by various names. Kumar, Shanmugan is a common name among Tamil people. They give that name. She means Sanmukhan, six faces. And Sentil is also a common Tamil name's name for Murugan. So worship of demigods is very prominent, although and worship of Shiva, although sometimes it's promoted, especially in Sri Lanka, among the Sri Lankan Tamil people, that it's Tamil culture to worship Shiva and Murugan. But actually a very large part of traditional Tamil culture is worship of Vishnu also. There are many major Vishnu temples in Tamil Nadu, such as is that of the, well, the most famous is the Sri Ranganatha Swami temple. And even very popular is the temple of Balaji in Tirupati, which is now in Andhra Pradesh, but it happens to be in Andhra Pradesh. It almost came in Tamil Nadu. There was when they were dividing the states. So it's like Bombay almost came in Gujarat, but it didn't. So what is this worship of demigods? Oh, and what is the worship of Krishna? Often it is considered that Krishna is one of the gods, or Vishnu is one of many gods. So how to understand all these topics? Well, we can understand it from Bhagavad Gita. Best authority is Bhagavad Gita. If at all we are to understand this topic, then best is to understand it from Bhagavad Gita, because Bhagavad Gita is accepted as the authoritative explanation of all spiritual topics within the Vedic culture, within the Vedic corpus, or among people who like to use the word Hinduism. Bhagavad Gita is considered to be the most important and authoritative text. Now, from Bhagavad Gita, it's very clear, except to people who have exceptionally muddy intelligence, that Krishna is supreme, because he states so clearly several times within Bhagavad Gita. For instance, Krishna says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matas sarvang pravartate. Everything comes from me. And he says it again in the next line, in another way, just for the sake of muddy-headed people. Everything is generated from me. Everything comes from me. So if you look at Krishna and you wonder where everything came, you look at Krishna, then you look at everything else, then you understand everything came from Krishna. And if you look at everything else, then you look at Krishna, then you understand that Krishna is the either way you look. This, either first look at Krishna, or first look at everything, and Krishna is the origin of everything. Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita, Mataparataram na nyat kinchid asti dhananjaya. Mai sarvamidang protam sutre manigana eva. Krishna says that there is nothing superior to me. Not even slightly. Kinchit asti. Kinchit, from thus you get the Tamil word kuncham, from kinchit. It means something. And kinchit na, as Krishna says in Bhagavad, means nothing. Kinchit nasti. There is nothing. Dhananjaya. And people say, well, I don't see Krishna. Krishna says, everything is resting on me as pearls are strung on a thread. Just if you like, if you see a pearl necklace, it rests on a thread. But you don't see the thread. But at the same time, you know, unless there's a thread, the pearls won't remain there. So for people who say we don't see Krishna, you can tell them, well, it's like seeing a pearl necklace. It must be a thread. Otherwise, they won't remain as a necklace. So similarly, Krishna is the principle, or in this case, not just principle, the person who holds everything together. What holds everything together? These dull-headed so-called scientists, they never even think of this question. What holds everything together? So why do people not see Krishna? Why, even though in Bhagavad Gita it's very clear, Arjuna also says, Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Adi Devam Ajam Vipum. See, you're smiling. That means you're a devotee. You like to hear these things. Whereas demons, when they hear all these things, they start to get angry. Shishupal would have already got up and protested by now. But fortunately, Krishna cut his head off 5,000 years ago. But his compatriots are still around. His comrades in crime. So Arjuna says that you, Krishna, are the supreme Brahma. And Brahma is an untranslatable word, but it's translate anyway, for the sake of translation. You are the supreme absolute truth. You are the supreme abode, param dhamma, abode or shelter, resting place. You are the supreme pure. You are the eternal, divine person. And here's an important word which Arjuna says again. Now he's saying it in the 10th chapter, and he also says it again. Adi Deva. Krishna is the origin of all the demigods. Unborn and powerful. Krishna himself says, Aham Adir Hi Devanam. I am the origin of all the demigods. So, Krishna is not one of the demigods. Why don't people understand this? Whereas we're very clearly stated in Bhagavad Gita. Nahang prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavita mudho yang nabhijanati loko mama jaladeyam. Because they're fools. They're foolish people. People are very foolish. What is the definition of a fool? Well, there could be many definitions. One is that you can't understand even very obvious and basic things. Just like, for instance, there's a joke, and depending on which race you want to poke fun at, you say, how many Poles or how many Chinamen or how many Irishmen or whatever does it take to put a screw in the wall? You got that one? You know this joke? It's a well-known joke. And the answer is, you say a high number, like 25 or something. And the answer is that one to hold the screw with a screwdriver and the rest to turn the wall. So it's mutal. In, I think you're saying, time is it? Fool. See, I learn all the important words in any language. Who's a fool? Who is a fool? Someone who can't understand, you know, very basic, simple things is called a fool. So in Bhagavad Gita, it's very clearly established that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But foolish people don't understand this. You see, it's just like some people you just can't teach them. You can't, even children. Some they're just, you just can't educate them. It's just they're just too stupid to understand even basic things. So Krishna says, "I'm not manifest to everyone. Even they might be big Sanskrit scholars, but they're still fools." Because they, instead of taking the straightforward meaning of the Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna is supreme, they understand something differently, thinking that they're very intelligent. But they are fools because they do not realize that Krishna, or they do not accept that Krishna is unborn and inexhaustible. These two words, fool and rascal, were common words in Srila Prabhupada's vocabulary. They're both derived directly from Bhagavad Gita. Why do people not accept Krishna as supreme when very clearly he is supreme? And from your Tamil area, there's also Yamuna Acharya has said that verse. What is that verse? No, I'm not remembering. Srila Prabhupada quotes that in Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, I'm not remembering it just now. That very clearly, Krishna is supreme. It's just very, just completely obvious about him in all respects, by his personality, by all the statements of Shastra, by all the great acharyas. But those who are fools and rascals, they do not understand. So fool and rascal. Namang dushkavino murha prapadyante naradhama maya parhita jnana asurang bhavam ashrita. Those who are rascals and fools, Krishna says, they do not surrender to me. There are different kinds of rascals. And one is just just a fool. One is the lowest among mankind. One is the great Sanskrit scholar who knows so much, or the great philosopher or scientist, who is so highly learned he can't understand even the most basic and obvious thing. And someone is an out-and-out demon. Now, worshippers of demigods are generally quite pious. Of course, there are different kinds of worshippers of demigods. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, yajante sattviko devan, those who are in the mode of goodness worship the demigods. It means at least they follow the Vedic injunctions. But then again, elsewhere we find that there are different worshippers according to different divisions. The worship of Shiva can be in three divisions: goodness, passion, and ignorance. Generally in ignorance, because that's Lord Shiva's jurisdiction. Those who worship Gauran Rupa, the horrible forms, the horrible forms of demigods, like Kali, Chinnamashtika, the form of Durga with her head chopped off. There are other forms of Durga also. You've seen that one? Seen that form of Durga? She has her head chopped off. She's holding it with all the blood spurting out. So these kind of forms are attractive to demons and people in mode of ignorance. But still they're in better position, Srila Prabhupada said, even than Christians, because they're in the Vedic culture. So, if Krishna is supreme, according to Bhagavad Gita, well, many people don't recognize that or understand that, then why do people worship demigods? And the answer is there, kamaistaistai hridagyana prapadyantena devataha. They worship demigods because their intelligence is spoiled. Because they have material desires. Instead of worshipping Krishna, they worship various demigods. And again, why? Kangshantak karmanang siddhim yajanta iha devataha. Kshipram hi manushelo. Okay, siddhir bhavati karmaja. That last line, siddhir bhavati karmaja. Perfection comes from work is the motto of IIT Chennai. They left the rest of the verse out and just... Perfection comes from work. They left out all the stuff about the demigods and yajnas and worshipping, all the rest of Bhagavad Gita, and just perfection comes from work. So then why do you go to IIT? You just become a donkey. And going to IIT, you become a sophisticated donkey. IIT means the Indian Institute of Technology. It's a prestigious educational institute named imitatively after the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. So this verse, Kangshanta Karmanam Siddhim, desiring perfection in work, Yajanta Iha Devataha, persons in this world worship the demigods, which suggests that in the spiritual world there is no worship of demigods. Kshipram hi marnushelo. Okay, within the world of men, certainly, one certainly attains perfection by work. Or they think that the perfection is simply to work and get the result of work, which is also described by Krishna. Ishtan bhogan hivo deva dasyante yagya bhavita. People worship demigods by various sacrifices. What is their purpose in doing so? To get their desires fulfilled so that they can enjoy themselves in this world. And the word bhoga is used. Ishtan deva, ishtan bhoga, their desired sensual enjoyment. So people worship demigods for various sense enjoyment. Of course, many people worship Vishnu for that also. But specifically, the demigods are worshipped for fulfilling desires. Now, elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, actually many times this word bhoga is used in various forms. So we find that the very idea of enjoying in this material world is foolish, because what is enjoyment? Everything comes to distress. Yehi sangsparsha ja bhoga dukha yonaya eva te adyantavante kaunteya nateshu ramate buddhaha. Krishna states that sensual enjoyment is simply a cause of distress. We think it's a cause of happiness, but it's a cause of distress. both in all phases, when one is planning sensual enjoyment, that itself is a cause of distress. When one is so-called enjoying, that's also distress, and the result is distressful. Or it's inevitably mixed with distress. Therefore, an intelligent person does not take part in it. And also to be understood in this connection, the word bhoga, enjoyment, sensual enjoyment, that is all meant for Krishna. Because Krishna is the enjoyer of everything. Aham hi sarva yajnanam bhokta cha prabhuriva cha. Krishna says, I am the enjoyer of all yajnas. You see, people worship demigods through yajnas, but actually Krishna is the enjoyer of everything. One who knows that, he doesn't try to enjoy himself. So we may ask that, well, where did all this come from then? Krishna, he's the source of everything, he creates everything. Then where did all this demigod worship come from, if it's such a terrible thing? Actually, everything comes from Krishna, right? So demigods and demigod worship also comes from Krishna. And we find that Krishna in Bhagavad Gita also talks about demigod worship in, apart from the derogatory ways that I just, well, there's another, antavattu palante shantad bhavati alpamedasam, that's also there, Krishna says that. People are foolish who worship demigods because the result of their doing so is limited and temporary. But prior to all this, Krishna states that sahayagya praja shrishtva puruvacha prajapatihi anena prashavishyadvam esha vo svishta kama dhup. Krishna said that at the beginning of creation, Brahma, he sent forth generations of people with yajna. Yajna was instituted from the very beginning. Yajna is loosely translated as sacrifice. But again, many of these words, to be properly understood, they have to be understood within the cultural ethos in which they belong. Because if we say sacrifice, then generally in religious terms, and in English or whatever the German equivalent is, we think of some kind of heathens, and isn't it when you talk about, because it has been the idea of sacrifice. Well, in the Bible, you see Moses came down from Mount Sinai, and there were all the Israelites performing a sacrifice, and Moses killed them all, and all this kind. So sacrifice is associated with paganism. So the word sacrifice, maybe not such a good word. Yajna, yajna. So that was ordained from the very beginning by Brahma. Who instructed them to perform these sacrifices, and in this way they can prosper, and ishta kama duk. Anena prashavidya yashvam eshavo svishta kama duk. Their desires will be filled. And then devan bhavayatanena te deva bhavayantu vaha parasparam bhavayantaha shreyaparam avapsyata. Brahma told them that you worship the demigods. The demigods will benefit you in return. And in this way you will fulfill all your desired goals, and Shreya Param, you will attain the highest Shreya. Shriya means like benefit or that which is auspicious. It's a similar word to Kalyana, but although in Tamil Kalyana means marriage, does it also mean auspiciousness like Mangalam? No, it's only used for marriage. Okay. So Mangalam, Kalyanam, Shreya, these are all synonyms, which means auspiciousness. So Brahma said this. But that is for people in the material world. Yajanta iha devataha. People in this world, they worship demigods because they perceive their self-interest in terms of material benefits. So that is given by Lord Brahma on behalf of Krishna. But it is for the people of this material world who are, after all, foolish. And Krishna is instructing Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita on a better level. So on one level, worship of demigods is good. And it's better to worship demigods than to be a total atheist, to not follow any religious principles. And even as Srila Prabhupada said, it's better to be a worshipper of many demigods and even to be a meat-eating worshipper of Kali than to be a Christian. When he was asked about that, Srila Prabhupada said so. Because he said at least they're within the Vedic culture. So the Vedic culture is meant for gradual upliftment, or at least that people don't go down very badly. So worship of demigods from one perspective is very good. From another angle, it's not very good. Just to give an example, I was talking about that this morning, apparent contradictions. Just like if someone is newly coming to Krishna consciousness and we ask them, how many rounds are you chanting? Say, I'm chanting 4 rounds. And we say, very good. Someone's already initiated and you ask them how many rounds you're chanting, say 4 rounds, and they say, well, that's not very good, you should be chanting 16 rounds. So worship of demigods is very good from one perspective. From another perspective, it's not very good. So Krishna wanted to instruct Arjuna in the what is actual, Shreya Param, what is the actual highest benefit. So therefore he told Arjuna that to worship various demigods, it's better than not doing so, because one who does not do so, tayadatana pradayebhyo yo bhunte stena eva saha, one who tries to enjoy this world without recognizing everything that is given by the demigods, they become just like a thief. If you enjoy the water, air, light, food, and all these items without recognizing the demigods who have provided these, you become a thief. But there's also a problem, but if you don't recognize Krishna, that's also a major omission, isn't it? It's just like, often the example is given that the parallel is given that Krishna is supreme and their demigods are assisting Krishna in the universal affairs. Not that he really needs them to do so, but he gives them some service to do so. So it's something like there's the king and his ministers, or in the modern setup, the president of the country and the ministers. Or whatever system. They probably have a president in this country, isn't it? Like the president in the United States? Is that the system in this country? Or do they have a prime minister, like in Britain?
Like 7.
Hmm?
Minimum of 7.
You don't have any one person in charge?
It changes every year, but it's just a representative. But there are 7 people who manage everything together. There's no one on top.
There's no one on top. There you go. Someone's pulling the strings from behind. So, a little difficult to give that example. So the natural order before all this Kali Yuga democracy is to have a king who has ministers who oversee different departments. So that example is given, the demigods are there. But so but if you just recognize the demigods but you don't recognize the king, then you become a criminal actually. But if you do recognize, if you have an intimate contact with the king, then you don't need any relationship with the demigods. So, where are we now? Now Krishna, he says that people who worship demigods, they have great faith in that, but that faith is actually given by Krishna himself. Yo yo yang yang tanung bhakta shadhi archatam ichati tasya tasya achalam shradham tameva vidadhamyaham. Krishna, he, as the super soul in everyone's heart, he gives the faith, he makes their faith strong by which they think I should worship demigods. And people who worship demigods, they think that, oh, the demigod is giving this to me, I'm getting these benefits from him. But actually, where's that verse? All the mayaiva vihitan, it's all given by Krishna. All the satya shatya yukta tasya radhana mihate lapate chattata kaman mayaiva vihitan hitan. So all those, the people who worship with great faith the demigods because I'm getting this benefit from that person, but actually it's the ultimate giver is Krishna. The demigods can't do so without Krishna. Now we may think, well, so what? All right, Krishna's supreme, but I like to worship demigods and I like to get material rewards. But Krishna states in this in Bhagavad Gita that dukhale amashashvatam, this material world is a place of misery where everything is temporary. And he also states, yanti deva vrata devan, those who worship demigods, they go to demigods, which means they remain in this material world. And madhyajino pi yanti mam, those who worship me, they come to me. So it might seem that it's all the same. You see, if you go in a demigod temple or you go in a Krishna temple, you'll see that in many ways it's the same. The kind of worship in many ways is the same. Of course, there are some differences, like in Durga temples, or in, there may be a killing of animals, which you won't see in Vishnu temples. And some of the objects, just like for worshipping Krishna, there's Tulasi leaf. For worshipping of Shiva, there's Bale leaf. For worshipping of Krishna, there are flowers like jasmine, is the English word jasmine, which covers actually there's so many flowers, I don't know what the English names are, but champa, chameli, mallika, all these flowers there. I think they're all different varieties of jasmine. I don't know. These are very common in Vishnu worship. Whereas in the worship of Shiva and Kali and Murugan, this red hibiscus, it's called in English, or japa, full in Sanskrit, or jaba. This red flower is very common for worship of Shiva. So, I mean, there's some difference in the details, but it's basically the same kind of worship, isn't it? Whether you worship demigods, or whether you worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. But the result is different because you're worshipping different persons. People think, well, it's all the same. Whoever you worship, the result is the same. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, if you worship the demigods, you go to the demigods, and if you worship me, you go to me. And the result of worshipping the demigods is that you go to their planet, to the heavenly planets. But what happens? Tetang bhukva swargalokang vishalang kshine punye martyalokang vishanti. By worshipping the demigods, one can go to the planets of the demigods, to the heavenly planets, but after some time, when your stock of pious results are burned out, then you have to come back to this world. Whereas, if one worships Krishna, and one goes to Krishna, as Krishna several times states in Bhagavad Gita, one never comes back to this material world. Very famously, Janma Karma Chame Devyame Vangyo Veti Tatvataha Tyakva Dehang Punarajanma Naiti Mam Eti Sojuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities, Krishna says, he never comes, he goes to me and he never comes back. So there is a very great difference between the result of worshipping Krishna and the result of worshipping the demigods, because there is a very great difference between Krishna and the demigods. It may appear to be the same because the worship is the same, and in people's minds, because they're muddled, they don't recognize the difference. And like that, you'll see different demigods have different carriers. Ganga or Brahma rides on a swan, Shiva rides on a bull, Ganga rides on a makar, which is translated as a crocodile. Murugan rides on a cock. Right? Cock? Male chicken? Yes. Yeah. So they're all there. And Krishna, he rides on Garuda. So they all have their different carriers. Krishna, Krishna has two hands. Vishnu has four hands generally. Durga has 10 hands. So they may seem that it's all the same, but it's not. There are very great differences. We see also Krishna in Bhagavad Gita showed the Vishvarup, in which all the demigods were inside the form of Vishnu. So in this way it's understood that there is a very great difference between the worship of Krishna and the worship of everyone else. So, one should worship Krishna and go to Krishna. The conclusion in Bhagavad Gita is Savadhaman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Raja. Give up all other ideas of dharma and simply take shelter in me. This will be one's ultimate benefit. So at least according to Bhagavad Gita, if we understand it as it is, then we should surrender to Krishna for our ultimate benefit. Worship of demigods is better than not doing so, is to worship them, but it's not really for our, not for our highest benefit. It saves us from falling into grossly sinful acts. Although in worship of demigods there may be sin also, just like in animal sacrifice to demigods. But that saves us from grossly sinful life. But it cannot give us the highest benefit, which is to come to Krishna. There may be some instances where the demigod, by being kind to us, directs us toward Krishna, just like we find Lord Shiva with that one worshipper. He asked for the most valuable thing, and Shiva directed him to Sanatan Goswami, who, although that person wasn't really ready for the most valuable thing, but by the mercy of Shiva and Sanatana Goswami, he got the most valuable thing, which is chanting the holy names of Krishna. And by people who go to demigod temples and demigod festivals, we often go there and distribute books, so they may come to Krishna consciousness, or by getting those books, or their children may do so. Generally we distribute so many books at many demigod festivals. That I remember in Malaysia we used to go to, just outside Kuala Lumpur, we used to go to, still I'm sure the devotees go, Batu Caves on Thai Pusam. So that festival is a Hindu festival and nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. It's quite strongly influenced by Tamil Guna. But we always distribute many books there. So that's good. So, any question about this? Yes, please.
Shiva Tattva.
Can you
please elaborate on
Shiva Tattva?
Yeah,
well, Shiva is some. Shiva is sometimes called a demigod. His position is unique. He's his own Tattva. We speak of Vishnu Tattva, Jiva Tattva, and Shiva Tattva, because he's somewhat in between. From one perspective, he's non-different from Vishnu. That's often stated in Shastra, that Vishnu and Shiva are the same. But from another perspective, he is different, because he has some function within the material world, and specifically with Tamoguna. So the most important thing about Lord Shiva is that he's a great devotee of Vishnu. Because he is Vishnu yet not Vishnu, fully transcendental yet apparently acting as if material, therefore to understand him is very difficult. And Jiva Goswami in one of his Sandarbhas says that Guru Tattva and Shiva Tattva are both very difficult to understand. Because in both cases, they are Vishnu and not Vishnu. The Guru is also Vishnu, as Krishna says, that Acharyam Maam Vijaniyan. It should be known very well that the Acharya is me. But at the same time, we know we have to accept that because Krishna says so. But at the same time, we should know how the Guru is Vishnu and also not Vishnu. So in the same way, we should know how Shiva is Vishnu and not Vishnu. It's mysterious for our very small intelligence. But that's the basic position. Lord Shiva is Vishnu. And we see even Vishnu himself. Vishnu who... There are various Vishnu forms. And they're all non-different from Krishna. But we find that Vishnu himself wants to worship Krishna. Mahavishnu He made some scheme to bring Krishna to see him. That's described in the Bhagavatam by taking away all the children of the Brahmana in Dwarka as they were born one by one. So, Mahavishnu is Krishna, but he wants to see Krishna. So he appears to be different. So these are not matters which are fully understandable by the intelligence. They have to be accepted, that's all. Even on the mundane platform, there are some such things. Just like when at school we learn that there can be no square root of a negative integer, because as soon as you multiply any negative integer by another negative integer, then you come with a positive. So you can't have a square root of a negative integer. But in higher mathematics, so we're told, I never got that high before I jumped off the mathematical bandwagon. And especially in physics, the square root of minus one is essential for solving various problems. So it's just accepted that it's there, but exactly how it exists cannot be said. So some things are like that. Inconceivable. We can discuss them to some extent, but we can't understand them to the full extent. And for that matter, we can't understand anything to the full extent. Even the most simple thing, if you go on asking questions, you'll find there are many things we don't understand about it at all. So, yes, that was the discussion, a little bit.
What is the difference between Sadashiva and Shiva?
Sadashiva and Shiva. Yeah. Well, Shiva means auspicious. It's also a name for Vishnu in Vishnu Sahasranama. So the name Shiva, when applied to he who is also known as Mahadev, Maheshwara, Umapati, and so on. Actually, that he's known as Shiva, but that name is borrowed from Vishnu. But he also performs some activities which don't seem to be very auspicious, such as destroying the universe. Sadashiv means Vishnu, who is always auspicious. And that name is also sometimes applied to Shiva, who by his nature is Sadashiva, but he apparently performs some inauspicious activities. So Sadashiva means Vishnu, and particularly that aspect of Vishnu from whom Shiva is manifested, although Shiva is also not manifested. Just like we say Krishna is the origin of all the Vishnu forms, but they're eternal. So Sadashiva is that form of Vishnu from whom Shiva is manifested. Sadashiva means Vishnu.
And Rudras are coming from Sadashiva?
Yeah, Rudras come from Shiva. And they may not be they may not be the original Shiva. They may be conditioned souls also. Although another name for Shiva is Rudra, but then there are the Rudras also. It's a big topic, Shiva Tap. Very big topic. So, Hare Krishna. Anything else? Yeah.
Maharaj, generally people actually in material world, they want to get some benefit, I mean temporary benefit, because they know only that actually.
People in the material world want to get some temporary benefit. Yeah, because that's all they know, yeah.
And they think, I mean, you know, when I will worship, I mean, God Durga or Lord Shiva.
Whoever gives the goods, you should go for it. Just like in an election, you vote for the politician who promises to give the best results. So people go to demigods, and whoever works for them, is it? I've heard people say, someone said to me once, well, I went to this temple, and this demigod, and that demigod, I worshipped Krishna, none of it worked. Then I went to Shirdi Sai Baba, and then everything worked. So, people are looking for some material gain.
But it works on karma activities actually, even they go...
How does it work?
I mean,
that can be a factor also, that when it's time, according to one's karmic dues, that one gets one's life's fortunes change, and one may ascribe that to some demigod. The demigods, they give benedictions. Certainly they do. But the benedictions are ultimately useless, and the demigods give them, but their power of giving is only given by Krishna. He doesn't involve himself much in all these petty affairs of curing people's backaches and getting them visa. There's Visa Ganesh in Chennai. And what happened to Visa Ganesh? Now they made it so more difficult to get an American visa. You know about that? Visa Ganesh in Chennai. There's a Ganesh deity who... The special thing you pray to him for is a visa for America or Australia or whatever, and he grants it. But now they made it so more difficult to get visas, so... And well, that's one thing, and people, they want to go less also. They're not so attracted to go because all the economies of these countries are going down. Indians don't want to go to Australia much because there have been many attacks on Indians there. So, I mean, Krishna, he's got better things to do than give people visas to America. Curing their backache, helping them to pass their exam. This is what I think at Tirupati. I mean, all you ask the people what they're going there for. Pass my exam. Enhance my business. This thing that our devotees should go there from time to time and just Tirupati. Balaji, oh, thank you. Someone came to pray to me as the Supreme Person. Just, you know, a devotee came, just anointed and said, give me this, give me that. I'm only earning this much, you have to make me earn some more. That's why Krishna says, go see the demigods. That's their job. He deputes the work. What's that term in management? You depute the work? You delegate the work. So, okay. Giving benedictions, all these money. Go to the demigods. You want all that? Go to the demigods. Don't bother me. But then again, you can come to Krishna also, and you'll become purified. Whereas if you go to the demigods, you don't become purified. So even if one has material desires, one should go to Krishna. In the famous verse, Akamo sarvakamo va moksha kama udara dhiti vrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether one is full of desires, without desires, or desires liberation, one should with great intensity worship Krishna. Among our devotees, this is quite often interpreted to mean that, well, it's okay to have lots of material desires as long as you chant Hare Krishna occasionally. But actually the verse says, Tivrena Bhakti Yogin. One should worship Krishna with great intensity. So just like Dhruva Maharaj, he had great material desires, but he worshipped Krishna with great intensity, and therefore he was purified. If you smoke marijuana and then sometimes chant Hare Krishna, you're not going to become Krishna conscious. That's not the meaning of this verse. Tivrena, with great intensity, one has to worship Krishna.
Should be our preaching strategy in Tamil area. Once you told me not to disturb too much people by speaking the facts, and at the same time...
What should be our preaching strategy? Not to disturb them too much. Well, in preaching strategy, in every place... Generally, you asked about preaching among Tamil people. So, the first thing is lots of Harinam, lots of book distribution. These are the main things. And if you just go and speak in such a way that everyone becomes totally disturbed and tell them that they're all fools for worshipping demigods, then even your opportunities to distribute books will be stopped. So it should be done. It should be spoken. But it should be done in a very systematic way also, just like that gods, demigods and incarnations. Recording is there of Tamal Krishna Maharaj in Fiji, I believe it was, where he very systematically went through and explained how Krishna is supreme. So like that, you can do it. But just, I mean, here I've just gone through it very quickly, but for people who are very attached to demigods, you can't expect that you'll just go up to them and tell them that, well, if you worship demigods, you're a fool. It says in Bhagavad Gita, you can't expect them just to accept that because they're attached to that. So it has to be explained point by point. So great patience is required. I think that all the Tamil people, who are not really Tamil, they're all Atma, but the present body is Tamil. You were all worshipping different demigods previously, isn't it? Is it? Isn't it?
Maharaj?
You were all worshipping different demigods previously.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
So, how did you come to the point of understanding that Krishna is supreme, we have to surrender to him, and not worship all different demigods? How did that happen to you? Someone came and explained to you gradually, or what? You got one of Prabhupada's... All right, I'll ask you.
Yeah, okay, I mean. Myself, actually, Maharaj, when I came to Sri Seminary, when I was a child, I go to Vishnu temple in Buddhist temple, you know, there's a Vishnu...
In Sri Lanka, you used to go to Vishnu and Buddhist temples.
Actually, I do not know about all philosophical facts.
You don't know about the philosophical facts.
I just go, yeah. Somehow I attracted to Vishnu.
You had an attraction to Vishnu. That's from previous life.
Yeah.
In your childhood, you had that attraction, means it was from a previous life.
Then as soon as I came to Switzerland, then Nirmal Krishna, we were working together. Then he said...
Oh, you're working in the same company as Nirmal Krishna.
Yeah, then he told me...
He was already into Krishna consciousness.
Then automatically...
So that came for you quite easily, because you had from your childhood an attraction to Vishnu. Yeah, even in Sri Lanka, it's not that everyone is Murugan worshipper. When I went there was someone who was there who told me he was working with some German aid corporation for building houses for people affected by the tsunami. But he said, my real aim in doing this is to promote worship of Vishnu, he told me. Did you meet that person? I went there with a Kinchan Krishna when I went up on the east coast somewhere near Batikola.
That owner of the temple?
Yeah, he built a temple also, Vishnu temple. Yeah.
Mr. Rageshma.
Maybe, yeah. So you can better ask those who have already come. Of course, it's different circumstances here. Krishna had some plan in bringing you all here. You had a plan to come here for some material reason, but Krishna had a plan to bring you here for some spiritual reason. So now that by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and his movement that you've come to Krishna consciousness here in this country, then you should also try to help promote Krishna consciousness, developing that in this country. This country has been kind to you in many ways. You have materially, you have in many ways a better way of life than you would have had in Sri Lanka. I mean, you might not even be alive in Sri Lanka because many people got killed there in the last 30 odd years. So now that you've taken to Krishna consciousness, you should try to do something to help also. Help promote the movement in this country. Among the Tamil people and the everyone else also. They're all spirit souls. So, book distribution, you can do. Many Indian body devotees in America who've come from India and who've taken up Krishna consciousness seriously in America, they're doing book distribution in America. It's quite good, actually, because for whatever reason, they're able to distribute plenty of books to American people, you know, white people, black people, non-Indians. So you can do the same. You should do the same. Then joining the Harinam, when you go out regularly here, every Saturday, something like that.
Once a month. We have more in the summer period.
In the summer you do more, yeah. Yeah, so you can do that. Try and see what you can do to help push on the movement here. A few weeks ago in Gujarat, one of the states of India, maybe you've heard of that, we had for the first time, long overdue, a meeting of the preaching leaders. I mean, it's one state, it's a population about 60 million, something like that, including migrant workers. So it covers quite a bigger area than Switzerland. But we have temples and preaching centers scattered all over the state, and devotees are preaching in various ways. But we had a preachers' leaders meeting, and we all came together and told what we were doing and shared ideas. And it was very enlivening, and just like that, we shared ideas how to distribute books and what we're doing and how we can work together better. And we're going to have another meeting like that in October. Nothing to do with temple management problems or any such thing, but just how we can push forward the preaching better. So I thought here in Switzerland also you have devotees scattered around the country. You could make it an open meeting, because there's, you know, who's the just like you have seven people and you don't have one leader, but you have in the country you have seven people leading. So in India there's like a big difference between the temple presidents or like demigods or something like that. But here there are many devotees who are practicing Krishna consciousness, preaching in various ways. There have been various severe impediments to the preaching, not from the government, but just from within our internal problems within our movement. But I can suggest that you come together, some, just like we did. We came together for 2 days and we had a structured meeting. You could just discuss what do we all do to push the movement forward in Switzerland. And just by doing that, you'll become much more enlivened and focused. So I suggest you could do that. That should be your mission. Every man, woman, child, cow, and blade of grass in Switzerland should be benefited by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. That should be the meditation of every devotee. Hare Krishna!
Hare Krishna!
Srila Prabhupada ki jai!